All right. I'm really excited to have Elia Kassoff on the show today because Elia is doing something that I just think is awesome. He is saving and revitalizing old brands and old products. And Elia, I have a vivid memory of being about 6 years old at the local country club by our house, going up to the snack bar and buying an Astro Pop.
Right.
And that Astro Pop like lasted me the entire day as a sucker. Now that's just one of the many brands and products that you're working on. Tell me a little bit about what's going on with Strategic Marks and Leaf Brands.
Sure. So I guess I'll start from the beginning a little bit and kind of bring you up to date.
Great.
So I started the company about 6 years ago, Astro Pop being the number one product. It was my favorite product growing up as a kid. And when I heard that they were getting rid of it, which was Spangler candy at the time, I couldn't find it in my local store, called them up, talked to the president and said, "Hey, where's Astro Pop?" And they said, "We stopped making it because it wasn't part of our quote marketing mix." And so it just came out of my mouth. I just said, "Hey, would you sell the rights?" And they said, "Yeah, sure." And I had never thought about doing this, but I just couldn't let my favorite candy go down the tubes, so to speak. I enjoyed it as a kid, and I figured instead of just letting it go or letting maybe someone else take it over, which I doubt would happen.
Right.
I thought it was my mission to get Astro Pops, back into the stores. And that's what I did. So I bought the rights. And then, a little bit later, redesigned the pop, brought it back. And then I was at the candy show with my cousin, Nate Leaf. And the Leaf family, my aunt married into the Leaf family, after World War II, she married my Uncle Ed. And so I remember Leaf candy ever since I was a kid. Whoppers, Jolly Rancher, Payday, Milk Duds. Plus every gumball machine had Leaf, and I remember going to
I remember those.
I remember going to the supermarket and seeing Leaf gumballs, and I was like, "Hey, that's our family!" At the show, people were kind of following my cousin around because he had his badge on that said Nate Leaf, and everybody remembered Leaf. A lot of people remembered him and his dad, and I came back and said, "I have to restart Leaf Brands." So that's what I did. I restarted Leaf, got the trademark, and started rolling Astro Pops in and started kind of rebuilding the company back into kind of more of a creative candy company, which includes, bringing back some of the older brands that people remember, like Tart and Tiny's, Wacky Wafers, Bonkers, and like I said, Astro Pops. We also got into the snack space. We brought back Hydrox Cookies recently. It's been out about a year now. What happened later is I said, I wonder what other things are out there that kind of fell by the wayside. And I started also kind of researching like why things or why companies or why trademarks or why products leave the market. And what's interesting is some people, most consumers would say, "Oh, well, it's because the market dictated the product's demise." And not necessarily. What happens a lot is that there's just a lot of product mismanagement in the market, or companies merge, they have multiple product lines, product managers say, it costs us $10 million to market this one item. We've got five other competing items now. Let's pick the top two and just shelve the rest and we'll figure out what to do with it.
Yeah, I think this kind of thing is really common with mergers and stuff like that, where the products on an individualized basis actually are fine and they would do great for a smaller company. They'd actually be a high line item in a smaller company, but in a big conglomerate, it's like, we have 17 cookies. We'll just, focus on five or whatever. And so not that the market isn't, willing to pay or willing to respond, right? They're just not maybe fitting in the bigger overall mix for the firm.
Yeah. I mean, some of these companies that, for the numbers to ink out, so to speak.
Sure.
They need to do $50-100 million worth of business on a product. And then they've got four of the competing lines that might be, a $500 million in revenue. And they don't want to also take away from those, their other brands. So it is interesting because they don't care about the customer base that love the product. They just say, hey, it's number crunching and this doesn't pencil out for us. So sometimes they'll sell it. Other times they just kind of put it on the shelf and forget about it. And they go on to other stuff because they're busy with the merger or just kind of go on with their life. And so that's kind of where I come in. I kind of think of us as like the recycler of the industry. But
well, yeah, you definitely have, you know, you got the defibrillator, right? And going back and revitalizing these old brands. And yeah. I mean, I think this is a really cool thing for several reasons. One, I've always believed that smaller businesses have that versatility and that like tenacity to make things work at a, in a way that big companies don't. They get old, they get to a point where things only work kind of on a slow basis.
Right.
And then also I love that this is a lot of what you're doing is going to be able to play into that nostalgia market, which I think as we see kind of this next generation getting a little older, I mean, we're watching this kind of recycling, like you were saying, of products happening where things that were popular 20 years ago are becoming popular again.
Yeah. And that goes also along with, you know, change. And yeah, everyone says change is good, but well, that kind of depends. I mean, Macy's is finding that change sucks. You know, we had a 5-year lawsuit with Macy's over a lot of the old department store trademarks because what I started to see in the market is that, you know, I wasn't just going to limit myself to products per se, but I wanted to bring back really cool and solid experiences with large customer bases that were already there. So we started looking at the 24 old department stores that Macy's had, and then what they did is they closed them down and figured, hey, let's create a major, you know, chain of Macy's instead. And economies of scale, we'll have one advertising campaign, one, you know, set of commercials, one set of buyers. You know, so what they did though, is they forgot that, well, I didn't say forgot, but they just didn't think about the regional play that customers love the regional department stores, the regional feel. They feel it's part of them. They would,
right.
Stores would have local, you know, promotions. They would know the salespeople. It was very customer oriented, but they also had a lot of product that was only for that region.
Right.
So that the customer walked into a department store, like for example, May Company and Bullock's and Robinson's, out here in Southern California. And, you know, they knew that this was stuff that was procured just for that market and not from some buyer in New York City who probably comes to the West Coast twice a year.
Right.
And has no clue.
So it's like the opposite edge of the sword of economies of scale, right? With economies of scale and with that massive branding, you lose the personalized touch for the local.
Yeah. So we had a 5-year legal battle with them in federal court. They were claiming, Macy's was claiming they still use the trademarks, which was false. They were actually scared. They didn't want to see the trademarks come back because they wanted these stores to be kind of dead and buried. But with trademark law, if you don't use it in 3 years, you lose it. And after 5 years of fighting, we finally agreed to a settlement, of which they had to give me a monetary component. And then they also had to give me quite a few of the store trademarks. So we now own May Company, Bullock's, Robinson's. We own Jordan Marsh in Boston, Bambergers in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Foley's in Texas, iMagnon, Joseph Magnon, which was not part of the lawsuit, but we have that. So we have a lot. We're in the process of resurrecting some of these stores. Like iMagnon is going to be the first set of stores. We're going to be doing that in Chicago. We're bringing iMagnon back to a mall owner called us and said, we love what you're doing. We're kind of redoing our mall, kind of looking at the trends, the different ways that people are buying. And we think that iMagnon is a good fit for our space. So we're kind of taking it. We're not just taking it the way it used to be.
Right.
We're also kind of updating it. But you still have with all of our core products and services that we have, you still have a core group of influencers that you have to please. You have to make them excited. So when mom right. and dad or grandma and grandpa take their kid into the new iMagnon or grandkid into the new iMagnon, they're going there because they want to share that experience. And if they walk in, they go, what the heck is this? This is not iMagnon. Yeah. You just lost that customer.
Correct.
And you lost the legitimacy of the grandkids because they're like, well, I guess it's not what you imagine, Mom.
Right.
So it's key to, no matter what we do, that we always either bring back the product or service exactly the way it used to be. So that core group of customer can share that experience with others. Or in the case of the department stores, we have to take that vision of what it was and then bring it into the 21st century with that kind of nod to iMagnet. So you still have that flavor. So I think that's the kind of the key of what we're doing. And we're also going to have, we're close to getting KB Toys. We're almost done with that.
Really? That's amazing.
Yeah.
Did they close? Or are they about to?
They were actually part of once.
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Okay. 1 second here. Thank you for calling. It's part of Mitt Romney, his old company.
Oh, okay.
Bain Capital. Bain, right. They kind of butchered it. They sucked all the money out. They bought it for mostly debt, sucked all the money out in services, and then said, oh, we're bankrupt. And I looked at KB Toys as a really magical place for kids and actually for adults, because it was in every mall in the country. And they did a really good job of creating or procuring a really good set of toys that in a very small amount of space. I mean,
real small footprint.
Yeah. But they had really good sales on products. They had really fun stuff. Every kid could walk in and spend a half hour killing time. And
there was no trip to the mall for me as a kid that didn't include going to KB Toys.
Yeah, exactly. So we're hoping going to be bringing that back. And also we're doing a virtual mall online called Retro Department Stores.
Nice. That's smart.
And then that's the current one, but that's a temporary one. But the real one's going to be called Retro Fashion Mall. And that's going to have all the brands with buyers doing the procurement for all the different regions. And so it'll give an opportunity for people to kind of shop based on the region like it used to be. And so that we're hoping that will, for people, what we're hearing is leaders in the internet are telling us that in e-commerce, that it's going to be it has a potential to be one of the biggest sites in the internet because of all of those known brands, known department stores. So those are the things that we're doing.
This is a lot of dominoes to fall after, you just wanting to go buy an Astropop. Right. So,
I think
it's pretty cool how much has kind of escalated from that. You've got department stores and you've got shopping and then you've got candy and snacks. How are you, what's the growth for both of those and, how are you balancing that?
Right. So as you mentioned earlier, you don't have to, the brand might be like, for example, Hydrox. When it left the market, I think they were doing about $32 million in business. And that's when Kellogg's pretty much left it for dead. They didn't do, they weren't supporting it. They weren't doing anything with it. to us, that's a hell of a lot of money.
Right.
But our goal is to bring back these items and grow the business. We don't have to do 50 million, 20 million, 10 million. On these products. Our goal is to make sure that products are still there for the customers, that we get tons of emails, calls, messages on Facebook thanking us for bringing these products back. And that's kind of what makes us go, excited and go every day, because it just gives us that momentum to know that we're doing good. So we're going to, look at other products and services, that we feel has a core group of influencers that's large enough. I kind of coined the term never sell to the dead.
Right.
There are a lot of products out there that only the dead remember,
If it's been too long, you've missed that window, right?
Because then there's no influencers. And the key thing for us is bringing back products that have memories, that have attachments, that have history.
Emotional, especially, right? I mean, emotional attachments, positive emotional attachments are going to really invoke that desire to kind of re-engage with the brand.
Right. And it's much more powerful than, for example, bringing in starting up a new brand where you have to, you know, educate the customer, start from the beginning. I mean, for marketing, that's a tough task.
Yeah. The thing I like about what you're doing is that so much of what you just said about marketing and creating a brand is telling a story.
Right.
And it's really hard you've got to be a good storyteller or a good creator of stories to tell it, to create a new brand. But when a story it has decades of history and has a real story that now is like a coming, you know, a comeback kid story. Oh man, what a fun thing to market around.
And it also, if you include into that, it's great for publicity because, for example, when I announced that we acquired Hydrox, got into USA Today and got a lot of publicity from that. We get a lot of publicity on these products because people remember them. For example, we just had an article about Donald Trump and Oreo, boycotting Oreo. We were the ones, I was the one that got Trump to boycott Oreo because they're moving to Mexico. And he's talking about bringing jobs back and so on and so forth. Well, meanwhile, Mondelez is moving their plant to Mexico, or they moved about 70% of their production to Mexico and Canada. And we felt, hey, it's a niche. And for 100 years, the competition was Oreo and Hydrox, Hydrox being the original sandwich cookie and Oreo being the knockoff. So we knew that we had leverage there. You're not going to get that kind of publicity with a brand new brand. It's like, oh, we're a new sandwich cookie. Hey, everybody, we're going to join the ranks of the all the other cookies in the market without any PR and any knowledge. No.
And so now it's basically like make sandwich cookies great again. And where are you guys doing manufacturing? How are you handling all of that? I mean, I'm assuming you're more focused on the business operations and marketing of it all. But there's a lot of pieces of this puzzle, right, in terms of the entire supply chain. So how are you managing that for each of the lines?
So the first thing I said to myself is, what am I good at? You don't want to be into areas that you're not good at. And we wanted to focus. And my focus was really product acquisition, marketing and development, not manufacturing. And these days, there's so many companies out there that they focus on manufacturing, and be surprised how many products on the shelf are not made by the actual company on the label.
Right.
If you look at Costco and Kirkland, a lot of the store brands, I mean, that's kind of that's where it all started. But
right.
So we outsource everything to factories based on lots of different things, but we also want a company that's going to kind of buy into what we're doing,
sure.
And they're willing to to interact with us to develop the product again. For example, the Hydrox, it took us almost a year to perfect the formula because Kellogg's and Keebler, when Sunshine changed hands so many times, they changed the formula. They made it sweeter. They added high fructose corn sweetener. They wanted to appeal to more kids. Pretty soon, it's a whole different product, and we wanted to roll it back to when it was popular, when it was the original formula. We did that with Tartan Tinies. We're doing that with Wacky Wafers. So, and even Astro Pops, the reason why Astro Pops failed is they decided to take the stick and put it at the tip of the pop because they were worried that, some people might poke themselves. Well, but it's kind of, Astro Pop is an Astro Pop.
Right.
And then Tartan Tinies, when it was a Wonka brand, Nestle took what was a great product that was nice. You could put it in your mouth. It would kind of, you could take a bite. It would kind of make a pop and nice mouthfeel.
Right.
And they decided to put a candy coating on it. People hated it because it was too hard. Sales started to really go down fast. Then they decided to make it into a round BB. So you couldn't stack them up and play with them. A lot of kids like playing with Tartan Tinies because they're stackable. So what we did is we rolled it back all the way to the original design.
Now, how did you like find all of that? I mean, so you're coming in and you're revitalizing these brands, and some of them it sounds like you're acquiring, and some of them you're just resurrecting through they've gone dormant, right?
Right.
So how are you finding formulas, and or is it just reverse engineering everything?
It really is, like I said, when we work with some of these factories, sometimes the factories have, old employees from some of the old vendors. Maybe it was you know, for Hydrox, maybe there was, you know, someone used to work at Sunshine. If it's a cookie company, you know, most likely someone, you know, from that cookie company worked at, you know.
Okay. So a lot of it's almost going off of memory of a, of an old tradesman.
Yeah. And
that's
then
amazing.
And then others, you know, I used to be, I was a high-tech headhunter for 18 years. And with Bonkers, I kind of know how to find people.
Sure.
So I actually found the person who originally helped develop Bonkers, who is semi-retired, and was able to contact him. And he's been helping us to rebuild Bonkers and actually improve on it. Because he's like, well, if I'm going to restart Bonkers, I want to do a couple of things to improve the production that I knew had to be done way back then in the 80s. And he also, for example, he took out the gelatin, which was a key component. So now it's going to be vegetarian and kosher.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So these are kind of things that whether we find, people that used to make it, or we have vendors that will, when I was had the USA Today article, we had some of the vendors call us and say, hey, you know what? We used to sell the cocoa to, you know, for
that makes sense.
Or we used to sell the, you know, the vanilla, or so we're able to. It's kind of a meld of not only the knowledge of the factories, but also vendors and, you know, people calling us up excited. And
yeah, vendors are always excited when to see a brand come back, because, you know, when that brand, people sometimes forget that when a business like or a product goes out and they stop manufacturing, there's an entire supply chain that because of that, and it impacts, and that's when a lot of times the smaller local businesses get really impacted.
Yeah. And in fact, with more of the publicity we had the retired CEO of Sunshine Biscuit, along with the head of production, call us up and said, hey, we were excited to see Hydrox back. You know, we bought some through Amazon. We want to help you out. We want to talk to you about tweaking a little bit. Here's what you got to do to make it exactly perfect. It's kind of, with all the PR, with everything, it really depends. And once again, let me back up. But if there's a product out there that we want to make, but at some point we go, you know what, there's no way we can resurrect it because we can't find the right people, the ingredients, and so on and so forth, we don't bother, because I don't want to bring back a product that just has a name stamped on it, but is really not the actual product.
Right.
Because once again, going back to the core influencers, the fans are the ones that are going to be that are going to buy it first. And they're the ones that are going to go, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm going to buy cases of it and bring it into work, give it to my kids, my grandkids, and so forth. So it's really critical that we make sure that it's exactly that way. And we use Facebook and social media a lot. So we have a lot of fans that help us do the testing, throughout the process. So,
and they probably love being a part of that, like, revitalization project. They feel like they, you know, there's a buy-in now that's happening.
Yeah, we had someone, one of the Hydrox fan that just recently passed away, and his son, you know, messaged us that, he was so happy. He said his dad, they actually made a video of his dad when he opened it up, the box on Amazon. They gave it to him as a surprise, and he's like, what's this? And oh my gosh, Hydrox. He opened it up. He ate it. He goes, wow, I feel 50 years younger. And they sent us that video. And they said that, you know, your product made our dad happy, the last couple years of the last year of his life. And we'll never forget it. And so it's such a powerful thing for us. But the fact that he was one of our taste testers made his dad's, you know, it was a big thing for him.
That's neat. It's amazing how a smell or a taste can take us back in time. It's really neat that you're doing that. And I had seen what you were doing on LinkedIn. That's where I first saw that you were bringing back some of the department store brands. And then I saw that you were doing the candy. And my daughter was walking through, I have four kids, and as I was getting ready for the show, she walked through and she saw the farts and she just thought that was hilarious. I was like, oh, we'll have to do an unboxing for their YouTube channel and have them try it. But where would people go to check you guys out, to buy product, to, you know, get involved?
Sure. Well, so we have, the first thing we do is we try to get the product into specialty and candy stores, if it's candy, and because those are the stores that they really, you know, the customers are looking for that experience or walking into a candy store. For example, like at Rocket Fizz, all the Rocket Fizz pretty much have all our products. A lot of the Sweet Factory, or I mean, so there's a lot of the, typically a lot of the candy stores around the country have our products. We at Cracker Barrel is one of our first national chains that now carries Astro Pops and Tartan Tinies in their stores. And then we start, now we're going to be start rolling it out to some of the larger chains. Because also what we have to do is part of, you know, when you reintroduce a product in many cases like Astro Pop, you're introducing a different price point, because when it left the market, sugar prices were much lower. And so, you know, what people thought used to be 50 cents or 75 cents each are now about $1.50. So you also have to kind of re-educate the consumer on the new pricing structure, and kind of, and that helps with the candy stores, because consumers are more price flexible. They're going for the experience, not right. just pricing. So that's our core, is specialty candy stores first, then rolling out.
Cool. Are you guys there down by where you're at? Are you guys in Balboa Candy?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, cool. Next time we're there, I'll make sure we grab some.
Yeah, and it's Sugar over in Fashion Island. Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
And then with Hydrox Cookies, a little different, because we had so many customers all in the country that were waiting for it. So they're in all the Kroger's and Kroger affiliate stores nationwide, which includes all the Ralph's in Southern California. We're also in Gelson's in Southern Cal. We're in about 1,000 Walmarts, and it's kind of selective. So you have to go onto our Facebook page to where we put the list of all the stores in there. And we're constantly working with other stores to get the product back in, because like I said, for 100 years, it was the Coke and Pepsi of the cookie aisle. It was Oreo and Hydrox, Oreo and Hydrox. So a lot of stores are really eager to bring it back. Plus the fact that now it's that made in America, Oreo made in Mexico. It's a whole new customer, which we didn't really think it would be an impact, but now we're starting to see that there's a lot of people switching.
Yeah, that has the advantage of having the history, but then also having, you know, even in its current status, a unique value proposition. That's kind of, that's not normal, I don't think, to have that kind of, I mean, with Astro Pop, you've got to face that price challenge, which I think, you know, the nostalgia and the, you know, the fact that it's coming back will obviously outweigh it. I'm looking at leafbrands.com and checking out some of the shirts and smiling at them. I think it's really neat what you're doing. I mean, would you have considered yourself a decade ago an entrepreneur, or is this just something that kind of just started rolling?
Oh, no, I hated working for companies. When I first went to college, I was working for some software companies. And how do I put this? To be blunt, I felt that when I left the industry and got into my own business, I said, wow, it's amazing how lazy people are and how less productive you are in a corporate environment, because, you know, you got people coming up to your cubicle. Hey, what's up? What do you do this weekend? Let's go to 5 meetings. Let's go to lunch. And at the end of the day, you're like, what was I doing?
Yeah.
So ever since I was a kid, I was an entrepreneur. I was actually selling. I was taking a lot of the sample candy from Leaf and taking it to school and selling on the playground. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So I was one of those kids that was pretty much, you know, selling candy. And I always wanted to be, you know, I was, you know, with headhunting, I was a top recruiter in the country in 2009. And, you know, I think I was really good at what I did. But after a while, when I fell into this, I kind of just started gravitating, because it's more, I have more control. I mean, I have control of the product, and if it's successful, not successful, the growth. And then I also love coming up with new products. So you mentioned Farts Candy. That was that's a Leaf product. And we developed that with David Klein, who's the inventor of the Jelly Belly. Oh. And he's a friend of ours. And we kind of wanted to create something that was fun and different. And also, Leaf was always creative, and we wanted to create something that some of these big companies would never come up with. And Farts Candy won the Most Innovative Product Award at Sweets and Snacks Expo, which is our national candy and snacks show in Chicago 2 years ago. So it's, you know, being an entrepreneur is exciting. It's fun, but it also takes a ton of work. But when you, I hate to be, this is a total cliche, but you know, when you love what you're doing, it's not work, it's fun. And to have control of some of my favorite candies growing up, and favorite, you know, like Hydrox is my favorite cookie. We were a kosher family growing up, so we never had Oreo, which had beef fat and lard.
Right.
So I just enjoy taking the products that I love and bringing it back to the public. And how many people get emails and calls and Facebook comments saying, thank you so much for bringing my favorite product back. You made my year.
No, you're doing something that's really unique and really cool. I mean, I've seen a couple of other brands do similar things like this. There's a shoe brand that I know called CVs and a couple of other things, but I love how you're doing it and that you're doing it on multiple fronts. What's the next big step for you?
Well, we've got a lot on our plate right now with the department stores and building out the e-commerce website, the virtual mall, and of course the acquisition of KB Toys, starting to build that out both online and also in stores. But not to say, you know, we're not on the lookout for other stuff that makes sense to us. You know, I'm looking for really unique experiences that I want to replicate and bring back. And it takes a while to kind of decide what, you know, what the products or services are. So, but right now we got our hands full with the stuff we have. So,
yeah, I think so. All right. So I ask all my guests this, it's the taking it from just being about business to about, we do business so that we can live the life that we want to live, right? So what's one thing on your personal bucket list that you really want to accomplish here in the next year?
Well, I tell my employees that, you know, we're actually doing it now. I mean, we just came back from the candy show in Dubai. I'd never been to Dubai and never thought I'd be in Dubai. So, right. You know, we took some time off. We took a little tour, you know, stopped off in Zurich for a little bit, walked around there and kind of, I just told my employees, I said, it's, you know, let's travel, you know, when we're off doing a candy show or whatever, let's just also have some fun while we're doing it and kind of see the world and experience new things. And so that's important to me, but, you know, I really want to grow a company that is, you know, like I said, I don't need to see $100 million company, but it would be nice. But, you know, I want something that I can grow and hopefully pass off to my family. You know, and, you know, people have asked me, well, what if someone offered you, you know, X amount, millions of dollars to sell the company? I said, I wouldn't sell it because number one, companies already screwed up these products to begin with. You know, right. We brought them back. Right. We fixed the problem. We fixed the images of these things. We built them up. The last thing I want is to sell it and see it, you know, fail. And that's the first thing. The second thing is it's fun. So what I'm doing is fun and I enjoy it. So, you know, going off and sitting on a boat somewhere just doesn't appeal to me.
Right.
Making people happy and continually getting the feedback from your customer saying, you know, how it's such a, you know, what you're doing is making such an impact in their lives.
Right.
That to me is my bucket list. So
I think it's great. Yeah. There's not many people that, you know, later on in their career get to go back to becoming Willy Wonka, right? That's pretty cool what you're doing. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for coming out on the show. This will be broadcast here on ABC News here in Southern California. And appreciate everything you guys are doing. Excited to see the future.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.